going skyward, it's also getting dumped into our oceans, and that is causing all kinds of havoc with marine life, with the acidity in our oceans. And to talk about that and other current and maybe even some newer concerns about the health of our seas and oceans and large bodies of water, which I think cover, what, about 70% of our planet, so they, of course, are very important, critical to human survival if you don't concern yourself with oceans for any other reason, and of course we all do and must. Zach Alton is joining us from Oceana. He is another contact and friend of D.R. Tucker. So, D.R., if you'd like to say a few words about Zach's work, and then we'll say hello to Zach.
Yes, Zach is with Oceana Massachusetts. Oceana is the largest international organization devoted solely to ocean conservation. Oceana is an international nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting and revitalizing the world's oceans. And Oceana's climate and energy campaign in Massachusetts is working to build a team of enthusiastic supporters who can help ban new offshore drilling in United States waters. It is a pleasure to have Zach with us today.
Thank you, Zach.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, are we still battling offshore drilling? Is that, not going away?
We certainly are still fighting against offshore drilling. As we know, the American Petroleum Institute is a strong, strong lobby, and they are working to drill here and drill now.
And, you know, we saw the BP disaster unfold over the course of, what, 3-4 months. We thought this will really change. Certainly in the middle of it, we, you know, were sure this would change, you know, drilling, capability and what the government will allow. After we saw that incredible ecological disaster, the full impact, of course, we won't know for years, if not decades, to come. How is it, though, you know, that is quickly, if not forgotten, washed over, if you will, by, you know, our need for oil and to get off foreign oil, those claims?
It's true that people have forgotten. In the media itself, it's not being talked about too often. But Oceana, you know, based on the direct impacts of oil to ocean wildlife, human health, its local communities, and its contribution to climate change, Oceana is recommending that we permanently ban offshore drilling, meaning that we don't want any new rigs, leases, or drills digging down into the ocean floor that aren't already there. And we also are recommending the development of a comprehensive conservation and energy plan that provides a transition from oil to renewable energy and prioritizes the development of offshore wind in place of offshore drilling. Now, before we get to talking about the BP spill a little bit, I thought it'd be nice to give the listeners a little bit of a background on offshore drilling in U.S. waters.
Please.
Great. So in 1981 to 2008, there were moratoria in place on new offshore drilling in federal waters. They protected most of the United States except for Alaska. There were two different moratoria, one put in place by the president, and then there was a congressional one. And basically bucking the industry pressure and political pressure, namely the drill baby drill folks, Congress allowed the moratorium to expire in 2008, and then President Bush rescinded the presidential moratorium. Then in March of 2010, President Obama proposed exploring for oil in several places previously protected by the moratorium, namely the East Coast and the Eastern Gulf of Mexico, plus two parts of Alaska. And a lot of these concessions were made in the process of trying to get comprehensive clean energy legislation passed. And then, of course, in April of 2010, on the 20th to be exact, the Deepwater Horizon rig exploded, killing 11 workers and starting a spill that wouldn't be plugged until mid-July, 87 days later. And according to government estimates, the BP disaster spilled 200 million gallons of crude oil into the Gulf of Mexico. And Obama has since taken his plans for expanded drilling off the table. However, nothing legislatively has been done with regards to the spill. Now, on November 8th, the Offshore Oil and Gas Program, part of the Department of Interior, released a report that said that their five-year plan that said that no drilling offshore in the Atlantic or the Pacific will be happening within the next 5 years. Now, that's just a plan. That's not permanent. That's nothing legislative. But also in the plan, they said they were going to open up the Central and Western Gulf, making all unleased acreage available for drilling. And the administration's five-year plan is good news for the Atlantic and coastal states, especially, you know, Virginia and Florida and all the states that fall along the Gulf Stream there. However, the Arctic and the Gulf are still in harm's way. And, you know, as we watch the BP oil continue to foul the Gulf of Mexico, it's becoming crystal clear that fundamental industry-wide safety and response failures must be addressed before moving forward with an aggressive program in the Gulf. The economy and the health of the Gulf may not survive another disaster like the one we saw in 2010.
And Oceana, I'm sure, was dismayed, disappointed, maybe even despairing when just a couple of weeks before the BP explosion and still President Barack Obama, you know, our we thought not only our first black president, but our green president, he seemed to really get energy challenges and the climate change situation when he was running for office, when he came out in favor of more drilling. And then that was temporarily stopped with a moratorium, but it seems that this administration is not as proactive as it needs to be in stopping these kinds of disasters.
I would agree. I think that offshore drilling is just an inherently dirty and dangerous practice, and there's really no way to do it safely. There have been, since 2003, we've seen at least 13 spills of 50,000 gallons or more, which is just completely unacceptable. And in the last 25 years, there have been more than 100 offshore oil spills of more than 2,000 gallons each. And right now we're seeing an oil spill off the coast of Brazil, and we've seen the oil spill that's happening in New Zealand, and we've seen the oil spill that's happening in the Black Sea. I mean, these are so prevalent. It's just, it cannot be done safely, and we need to transition to clean energy.
And we certainly do. No argument there. DR, what's your perspective on just the politics of drilling right now? It's not surprising that this current crop of Republican candidates is, I think, are they all for it? What does John Huntsman think about that?
Well, I believe Huntsman has proposed offshore drilling as part of his energy
plan. That's what I thought.
Again, you know, on the one hand, you would love to see a Republican candidate say, you know, I'm going to be the first candidate to propose a fully renewable energy policy. But of course, if a Republican candidate did that, they would have the holy hell beaten out of them by every element of the conservative media in this country. So that would obviously be a problem. Zach, what Do you think it's ultimately going to come down to a situation where some entity, and the way things are set up, it's most likely to be a Democrat, has to propose and somehow get past some form of carbon pricing to move us fully towards renewables like wind? Is it basically a matter of the transition point has to be a full pricing of carbon?
I think certainly that would help. I'm not an expert on these fields, so I can't speak from a scientific or economic background kind of on these issues, but certainly that would help. Right now, offshore wind is being incentivized by the government, and the more that's done, I think the quicker we're going to see offshore wind development happen.
Mm-hmm.
Oceana and myself personally fully support the Cape Wind project and would like to see that happen and see steel in the water. But as we continue to see, there are people are fighting back against it with a lot of, you know, mostly NIMBY claims.
When it comes down to it, as much as they may not want those windmills offshore, would they rather have, you know, an oil slick? It just, you know, we have to get real about the fact that, you know, we can't sit here and talk about how bad, you know, drilling is if we don't also talk about what are we going to do as alternatives, you know. So it just has to be something that we get busy on, I would think. It's not perfect, and it is the NIMBY factor, and it is not just, you know, conservative Republicans, you know, saying no. You know, of course, we know the whole Kennedy story with their opposition to offshore wind, and Robert Kennedy Jr., if nothing, is certainly, you know, a very dedicated environmental activist.
Mm. Very true, very true. I think what gets lost in a lot of this debate and about offshore drilling is that folks, especially on the Atlantic coast, I'm in Massachusetts, like DR said in my introduction. I run the Oceana's Climate and Energy Campaign out of Massachusetts. We have organizers in seven other states and our headquarters in Washington, D.C. But on the Atlantic coast especially, if they open any of the Atlantic coast to drilling right along the Gulf Stream, like it's been proposed in Virginia and strongly urged by the American Petroleum Institute that we need to drill off the coast of Virginia, any spill would get caught up in that Gulf Stream and could wreak havoc on our, especially Massachusetts, our tourism industry, our fishing industry. I mean, these are things we rely on, and an oil spill can be a real job killer. And in this economy, I think we need to focus on preventing things like this from happening, potential disasters.
And not to switch gears too much, but we just have a few more minutes. Zach, what about your photo petition campaign? Is that what you said you wanted to talk about?
Yes. So we, Oceana, starting our climate energy campaign here in Massachusetts and again our other states, are running a photo petition right now, which is an opportunity for people to take a picture with a wind turbine and a whiteboard. And the whiteboard has a message on it that says basically, yes to wind, no to oil. And it says their name, and then we will take all of those photographs that we get of all these people from up and down the coast. We will put them on our Facebook page at Oceana, Massachusetts. If you go to Facebook and type in Oceana, Massachusetts, and then all of the photos from all the states will be compiled on Oceana Todd. So it's Oceana and then T-O-D-D. Todd is a fictional superhero that acts as a mascot to this photo petition campaign, and Todd is an acronym that stands for Thwarting Offshore Drilling Disasters, and he's again more of a mascot that kind of that people can point to, and it kind of makes a very serious issue have a side that people can relate to. Again, this
like
campaign
that.
To get involved, you can contact me at zaltman@oceana.org or head to stopthedrill.org and learn a lot more about this. We hope that this photo petition campaign can make a difference in our lobbying meetings and also just getting folks involved.
And hearing about Todd reminds me that I believe Ted Danson is one of your spokesmen for Oceana, is that correct?
He is. Ted Danson was there from the beginning in 2001, and he's been there all along, and he is just a fantastic ocean advocate and does a lot of great work for our organization.
And like so many people who became activists because of a personal experience, they, I believe, had a house on the shore in Malibu and could not swim in the ocean, and this is probably a couple of decades ago. He's been active on oceans as long as I can remember, longer than I've been even involved in this, covering this beat. And he was outraged that they, were not able to swim in the ocean right outside their door, and became a very dedicated activist on that front, and happily has stayed with it. And sometimes it does take a celebrity, doesn't it, to bring attention to these issues,
even though the average members of the public are
impacted equally, if not more so.
Yes, it does. It certainly helps, and Ted's got that has a great story about having to deal with that Santa Barbara spill, and not being able to swim with his children, and realizing that we are just killing our oceans, and we need to return them to levels of abundance that they were in years previous. With the effects of climate change on our oceans are all too evident, as we're seeing. Our oceans absorb about a third of the carbon dioxide that's emitted into the air. And it causes our oceans to be more acidic, and that's not good. That's not doesn't create livable conditions for a lot of the creatures and animals that occupy the ocean.
And I wonder, Zach, are we already starting to see the softening of the shells? We've heard that the mollusks out there are going to be first hit, sort of the canary in the mine, because of the warming oceans. That acidification process will weaken their armor, essentially.
Right, and I've spoken. Oceana has a team of scientists that work full time on making getting the science down behind all these issues. And I've talked to some of our scientists about that. And without speaking on their behalf, I would think that they would agree. The signs of climate change are there, and the ocean is an amazing indicator of our overall global health. And the oceans aren't doing well, and we need to focus energy and attention on climate change issues in order to combat these negative side effects that the oceans are feeling.
And are you confident that we will turn things around in time, or at least slow the damage? Because it is so alarming, and yet progress is so slow, it can be so discouraging. And yet folks like you, all of us, get up every day thinking we can make a difference. And wondering what it will take to really turn the tide, so that we still don't, as I often say, have this experience of living in a parallel universe. Are those of us who work in environmental education and outreach, and then everyone else, and to really feel at least that we have more members of mainstream America, you know, members of the public, just as alarmed, if not alarmed, just concerned and actively doing something about it, or at least talking about it.
Right, right. And I'm confident that we are making progress on this issue, and that good things are right down the road, especially when it comes to climate and energy legislation. My experience working on the ground in Massachusetts and in D.C. as well has been just an overwhelmingly positive experience. I've met some really amazing, passionate people. Some of those people have been on your radio program before. And it makes me confident that we are putting a dent in this issue, and that we are making a difference, and that, you know, if our generation, my generation, and the generations to come are proactive and are activated, we can really make a difference.
I appreciate that and all the work that you're doing there at Oceana. Any closing thoughts for questions for Zach, DR?
Before we let you go, I know that Oceana is also very concerned about overfishing, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on how effective a job that the Obama administration has been doing in combating this problem, especially with NOAA, and also what do you make of some of the criticisms of NOAA? I know our Zach and myself, our Senator Scott Brown has been, hunting for NOAA head Jane Lubchenco's head, so to speak. So, what do you make of how effective of a job is NOAA doing at combating overfishing?
Good question.
That's a great question, and I certainly have my personal thoughts on it. But in speaking on behalf of Oceana, we have a whole other team of folks that focuses solely on our fishing campaign, mm-hmm. and they would be a much better person and much better people to talk to about this issue. As I can only speak for myself on a lot of these issues. But as ZR and I have done, we've worked on a lot of climate and energy issues and trying to get Scott Brown to vote our way on specific issues mm-hmm. regarding drilling and wind and. And it's been tough. It's been tough sledding with Scott Brown, and we're hoping to make a difference and hopefully get his support on upcoming pieces of legislation that will benefit our oceans.
And isn't it wonderful, Zach, if I can just praise DR for a moment, you know, having someone who is a, you know, Republican, moderate Republican, you know, on the side, because it should be everybody. It should be transpartisan, these issues. And I just love his being a living example of somebody who read the science and had an eco-epiphany and is even more passionate than I am about getting people to wake up. I mean, just because he doesn't sleep. He all night is aggregating content and putting it in our inbox. Apparently doesn't sleep.
DR is fantastic, and I know it's I'm sure he's blushing right now, but this is all of my meetings with him and all of my interactions with DR have been overwhelmingly positive. He's an amazing writer, and it's so refreshing to have somebody from a different political viewpoint or came from a different political roots kind of see the light on this issue and then want to spread the message so passionately.
And, of course, because DR is my friend, I can say, being an African-American, you probably couldn't see if he's blushing with all these compliments. And I mention that because I want to run this by you, Zach. We have an idea to try to get an Internet television show on, given our, you know, political differences and living on different coasts. And, yes, different colors of our skin, which, of course, matters not at all. But let's go with the differences here for a minute. Have a show that's red and blue, black and white, but green all over. What do you
that
think?
Sounds great. That okay. Sounds fantastic.
That's what we need, though, is to show people this is not about political. Wake up and smell the CO2. And I want to thank you, Zach Alton, for your comments, and we will have someone else from Oceana talking about the fishing industry on, because we cannot talk about it enough. It's urgent, and thanks for the great work over there letting people know that.
Great, and thank you so much for having me on your program and giving me the chance to kind of touch all your listeners out there and hopefully get them active and get them involved in this fight.
Maybe we'll have you on as one of our first guests when we get red and blue, black and white, but green all over up on the
Thanks.
Internet. If not
Thanks.
On MSNBC. Trying to get one there called Green Forward, since Lean Forward is their theme. What do you think?
That's great.
Thank you. DR, you're there, and I want to thank you because I think you've got to go back to work now. You do have a job, another job, besides being our climate change aggregator extraordinaire, surfing the web and just capturing all the best stuff out there. Thanks for joining me, DR.
Same to you. Thank you so much.
I'll be back soon. And when we come back, we'll be speaking with someone from the Jewish National Fund about the environmental situation in Israel and talk about the aftermath of that disastrous fire just about a year ago and other issues such as their water conservation needs and also what's happening with all those trees we planted as young kids, we Jewish kids who gave our quarters to plant trees for the Jewish National Fund. All that when we come back. You're listening to The Green Front.